From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. Georgia gubernatorial campaigns say education is a top priority. Among the goals on Stacey Abrams' platform, wraparound services. GPB's Grant Blankenship reports on what an expansion of these services could mean for students.
Years ago, when Lee Colburn was principal at Marietta High School in Cobb County, she thought her students were getting what they needed.
So we were providing tutoring and summer school and intersessions, and that's all important. But kids were talking about difficulties with poverty, mental health, immigration, addiction, transiency.
All things she says were outside her expertise, but all things that could keep a kid from learning. Colburn kept listening until she was convinced that what her school needed were outside experts. That would eventually inform the exhaustive list of resources of what became the Marietta Success Center, next door to the high school.
A clothing pantry with a laundry mat, a food pantry, a pantry for school supplies.
We had all kinds of toiletries and things available.
Measuring the success of efforts like this is tough because they do offer so many things. Still, most studies of wraparound services suggest they are a net benefit to students. Today, 3 years later, Colburn has her own private consulting business and has helped other wraparound service centers get up and running, but mostly in Atlanta and North Georgia. But the other two-thirds of the state want this, too, which is why Colburn and her business partner, Linda Beggs, are training 16 educators in an old school building with stained wood and that old school smell. It's halfway between Macon and Augusta and the town of Tennell.
Moving away from the random acts of good intention to the interconnected.
Each of these educators has been assigned their own 10-county chunk of the state where they will be trying to launch wraparound services. Their salaries take up all the money the State Department of Education had to put toward this pilot project. Former Pulaski County Superintendent Janice Sparrow is one of the trainees. She's charged with looking after a set of counties 50 miles south of Macon. She says this is great, but she has one big question.
Who's going to pay for this? Where's this money coming from?
Because services cost money, right? Lee Colburn says not necessarily. The idea is to look at the businesses, nonprofits, and charities in your town and tell them what your students say they need. Then the services just come. All it costs is time.
I linked a lot of arms. I didn't twist arms.
But she did it tirelessly until it was obvious it was a full-time job. So Colburn hired an arm linker for $115,000 in total compensation.
First year we had $1.7 million in services.
That's a 10-time return on the investment. Still, Janice Sparrow says for a rural district, even that seed money could be out of reach.
In the smaller systems, sometimes you've kind of maxed out.
Another issue. Go to a small town in Georgia and you're likely to find two high schools. One public, one private. One black, one white. And that complicates the job of putting resources together for educators like Shonda Green, who represent counties in southwest Georgia. What's your elevator pitch to them?
How it's not an isolated issue to just one population of the community, but it becomes a complete community issue.
Democratic gubernatorial candidate Stacey Abrams wants to set aside funds for wraparound services as a part of a larger revamping of the state's school funding formula. Her aim of ending the state's private school scholarship program would also free up $100 million for that cause. Meanwhile, the educators and Lee Colburn's training have their work cut out for them. Up next, they will conduct surveys to see how well their corners of the state can meet student needs with what they have at hand. For GPB News, I'm Grant Blankenship in Macon.
And Grant joins us now to discuss how candidates propose changing Georgia's education system. Grant, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So before we get to their respective plans of the candidates, let's talk about the core of your story in this wraparound school services. We heard some of the educators talk about the challenges of getting funding, especially in rural areas. So what is the current thinking about funding these services as compared to textbooks or math teachers?
Well, yeah, I mean, clearly traditional academics still have to be funded. Nobody's talking about, you know, taking money from the math department for an on-site laundry. But it's in rural districts where this philanthropic money in North Georgia is sort of thick. In rural districts in South Georgia, it's not. And so there is this question of exactly how we're going to pay for this stuff in places outside of Atlanta. And that's where the idea of state support for wraparound might come in.
And of course, that comes from the state funding comes from the directive of the governor in many cases. The candidates for governor do agree on some things in terms of education, not on others. Where do wraparound services fit into Democrat Stacey Abrams' education platform?
Well, so you may remember hearing in the news last year or in the last year or so that the state formula for funding schools was only fully funded for the first time ever in like 30 years. Mm-hmm. That formula came together in the 1980s. No one was thinking about wraparound services when they came up with that formula. So Abrams has said she wants a new school funding formula for the state that does take wraparound services into account. I asked the Brian Kemp campaign for a couple of weeks about their stance on wraparound services, and I was never really successful in hearing back from them. So I'm not sure what he thinks about this issue.
Abrams has declared, I want to be Georgia's public education governor and to fund wraparound services by ending the state's private school scholarship program, or SSO. Kemp said that he would expand it. First of all, how much money are we talking about?
Well, so that's $100 million now. Kemp wants to make that a $200 million ceiling. And this is money that comes from you and I, from people who choose to put their money into these funds. In return, you would get a dollar-for-dollar rebate on your state income taxes. So this program is sort of in opposition to the wraparound services thing. It's almost like a top-down version of helping students get what they want versus sort of the ground-up version that wraparound presents.
Well, so these tax credits help thousands of children attend private schools, correct? By allowing donors to pledge to an organization providing scholarships, right?
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah, when you put your money into the program, you get to say, this is the school I want the money to go to. And the problem is, we really don't know, and because of state law, we don't know who the children are who are getting these scholarships. We don't know who they are demographically, economically, and maybe even more crucially, we don't know what they're doing academically. We don't know if they're benefiting from this private school education in a way that they weren't in public school. And again, that's because state law says the private schools don't have to report any of that.
This isn't the first time that the private schools, this SSO program has come up. Lieutenant Governor Casey Cagle was secretly recorded earlier this year. He was criticizing a bill to raise the cap on tax credits for private school scholarships, admitting that he had to for political reasons. So let's hear. Opponents of expanded private schools question their effectiveness. Here is educational policy analyst Stephen Owens.
We know the scholarship granting organizations, we know the total dollar amount given to those organizations. Beyond that, we don't know what students took advantage of these. We don't know if they come from high-income background, low-income background, where they went to school, how they did at those schools, or anything.
So no assessments, as you mentioned, and Stephen Owens capitalized on just there. So how do you know when you take how much money from a family that goes to a school without private school students performing? Do we know if they're performing any better than public school students?
Well, so Ben Scafidi is an economist at Kennesaw State University who has written a lot about this. And he would tell you that we're framing this question in completely the wrong way. It's not about how students are doing academically when they go to these schools. It's whether or not parents who are taking advantage of the scholarships feel like they're getting what they want. And the onus is on them to decide if this is money well spent. So basically, you're left with common sense and the faith you have in the private school that it's doing what you want it to do. That being said, there are two studies out there that give us some glimpse of what might be going on. So from the University of Virginia, they looked at private schools to see if they did give kids a better education. And when you control for income, that is to say, when you bring the wealthy kids down to the same sort of level statistically with non-wealthy kids, it doesn't look like private schools do a better job. That was what the University of Virginia found. And then over in Alabama, the state legislature requires an academic vetting of their scholarship program. And so at the University of Alabama, economists looked at their scholarship program and found that, sure, low-income kids from public schools, when they go to private schools, they get close to the state averages on ACT test scores. That's the test you take, one of the tests you take to get into college. They get close to state averages but don't exceed it. So in Alabama, they kind of felt like it was a wash. It didn't hurt, but it didn't help a whole lot.
So that's counterintuitive in some ways. We tend to think that the private schools are much better because if schools are for-profit ventures, their financial incentives might make them perform better. It sounds like there's not a lot of evidence of that.
Yeah, I don't even know. These schools aren't for-profit ventures as such, but they are free market actors, right? I mean, they take in money and they ask for money and people either choose to pay it or not. So they're at the whims of the customers. I mean, they are meant to be responsive to the parents who send their kids there. And that's sort of the argument for these school choice scholarship programs. Be responsive to what parents say they want for their kids in terms of education. And that responsiveness is, for the proponents of this, the ultimate measure of how effective this program is.
We're getting a read of the respective gubernatorial candidates' education platforms with GPB reporter Grant Blankenship. Grant, do you get a sense of how pivotal an issue this is for voters?
You know, I wish I could get in the minds of everyone at my whim, but I don't know. I know for educators, this is a big, big issue. And I don't think that many public school educators are lining up behind the scholarship program. But as for what parents and just citizens think, it's hard to say. It must be a big issue if it's out front for both campaigns, however.
Yeah, and are both of them putting it in the front platform of their campaigns?
Well, I would be remiss if I didn't remind everyone that the other big education issue for Brian Kemp was this $5,000 raise for every teacher in the state to the tune of $600 million. So his issues are twinned that way. But yeah, for Stacey Abrams, this wraparound services thing and this equity in education issue is very much out in front and sort of tip of the spear for what she's telling the state.
Oh, Grant, I would be remiss to not ask you about the reporting that you've done on the ground in Albany and other affected areas by Hurricane Michael or Tropical Storm Michael when it hit there. People struggling for basic needs. Heard a story that you did this morning for infant formula, for example. Is assistance now making its way?
Yeah, I mean, they're being very systemic. I was in Doherty County, Albany, yesterday, and they are being very systemic there and helping people find food. And the thing about that community is they're well practiced in this. They were hit by two tornadoes last year within a month of each other. And so they had infrastructure in like sort of ad hoc community-based infrastructure, neighbors taking care of each other. They had that to just sort of slide into place again when this hit last week. And that's definitely happening there. That being said, there's like 30,000 people in Albany alone who are still having a hard time getting food. So it's going to be a while.
How about power and cell phone service, which I know in some affected areas is not working? How is it working in there in Doherty County?
Power is not back on yet. As of yesterday, there were still 13,000 customers in the immediate Albany area that were without power. Officials say it could be up to 5 days before that's all back on. And, of course, that affects how people can store food. Even if you can get food, a lot of it's going to, the good food, the nourishing food, will largely be perishable. And so people are saying, well, even if I can get meat, where am I going to put it? So.
Well, GPB reporter Grant Blankenship, we will keep listening for your reports. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So coming up, we're going to survey the agricultural damage wrought by Hurricane Michael and check in with how farmers in southeast and southwest Georgia are coping with the loss of crops and their main source of income. This is On Second Thought. From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. President Donald Trump was in Georgia yesterday to survey the damage from Hurricane Michael. The storm has killed at least 17 people. Many more are expected to be dead who are missing. Michael also ravaged Georgia's agriculture industry, splitting decades-old pecan trees down the middle and stripping cotton plants across thousands of acres in South Georgia. FEMA says the true cost of the devastation will not be clear for some time. We're going to check in with some growers in the area in just a moment. But first, we have Georgia Agriculture Commissioner Gary Black on the line. Commissioner Black, thank you for speaking with us.
Yes, thanks for helping us tell the story to our citizens, because it is a serious one, and it's going to require all of us to get Georgia restored properly.
Well, you did tour the damage in Southwest Georgia and said our worst thoughts were realized. So for people who aren't farmers on the ground there, what does it look like?
Well, we lead the nation. I told the president yesterday, we lead the nation in pecan production and peanut production, forest products production. We lead leaders in cotton and vegetables. But unfortunately, today we lead in destruction. Mm. Severe catastrophic damage in pecan, in our forests, with the fall vegetables, with cotton. And it's very much unprecedented. We've been up several times. We've been capturing video and stills for quite a bit of Atlanta media is using, and we're grateful for that. We're going to continue to keep that fresh so that all of our citizens can see what our farm families and rural communities are going through. We've got to realize the ripple effect through these communities will be felt. And it's really I've been saying for a week, it is a generational impact, particularly with some of my friends on the phone here, because they're with pecan, and it truly is a devastating time, and we've got to find solutions and find them quickly.
Well, we'll be speaking in just a moment with Randy Hudson and Mark Peel, who are growers, respectively, of cotton and pecan trees. But Governor Nathan Deal did issue an emergency declaration before Michael hit. President Trump declared a disaster in several Georgia counties. So what did these kind of proclamations do to help get aid to Georgia farmers?
Well, those are steps that you take. What I've spoken with Secretary Perdue, we've been together the last 2 days, and we'll be together again today. This is beyond any normal disaster declaration and freeing up Small Business Administration loans. We're going to have the attention of Congress. They're immediate, however we term it, use it with existing USDA programs to have some disaster relief with our farmers. But long term, there are issues with debt restructuring that we're talking about. I've got a bankers summit, two bankers meetings already set up, and a summit next week to try to think about what thoughts have we never thought before about what would a relief package look like with debt restructuring, working with our local banks. Because this you just don't have a magic wand to make this go away. There are the long-term impacts to the families, but these farmers have got to have plans going forward next year. We've got to have cleanup. We've got to get prepared for 2019. There's going to be stress on local banks, stress on the farm credit system. And so I'm hopeful that whatever disaster package we ultimately can work with Congress on and work with the administration, we'll have something to do with how do we restructure our debt. And the president could not have been more gracious. I was able to introduce him personally to 15 different farmers that we had arranged yesterday after his tour of the Red Cross, and he gets the pain, he really does. And the commitment and his charge to the secretary yesterday, and I'd have to let him speak to that, but was genuine, and it was making sure that we're going to have the full effort of this federal government to address the needs of Georgia.
Well, we did talk to a number of farmers to prepare for this segment. Many told us that they had not seen any sign of GEMA, the Georgia Emergency Management Agency, not your agency. But how do you address farmers who say we need to see more people from the state on the ground lending a hand?
Well, ma'am, I don't know how to characterize who you ask what, but I can tell you the Georgia Emergency Management Agency and the State Operations Center has been at work for 8 days. This was open long before. I can't speak to GEMA people on the ground. I know what our team has been doing. We've been working with poultry owners. There were 94 poultry houses that were destroyed.
Yeah, it looks like about 2 million chickens from the figures I've seen.
maybe that there's lots of numbers out there, but where the long time issue here is the destruction of the structures and the infrastructure for the farm family. And what we're working there is we have disposal issues to deal with, but there's a big one of the big challenges right now is with each one of those structures, you can't do anything to them, or you can't move forward until you have the answers from insurance adjusters, and those come from private insurance companies. And so that's nothing the state doesn't have anything to do with that. I have people on the ground right now that are helping farmers step by step in this process. We've got some opportunities to burn structures. We have opportunities to bury, and, you know, working with EPD, there's a lot of moving parts there. Likewise, we've got people on the ground. We've got to make sure that the integrity of the food supply for all of our citizens. We had over 900 licensed facilities, food processors, retail establishments, you know, like convenience stores and grocery stores. And some of them lost power, some of them didn't, some of them have damage, some of them don't. But we've been working, our rapid response team's been on the ground since the wind stopped blowing to start these assessments. And so that we can, and that's a very important public health responsibility that we take very seriously. So that plus 14 animal shelters that private and public entities that we've been working for, we're very fortunate that that was not really an overrun situation. I think we maybe had about 200 occupants at the highest number that I saw. But we have full commitment of the state government and the federal government, and to work step by step with every producer.
Well, Commissioner, I know you're busy trying to get to it. So I really thank you for your time.
Well, you're very kind. Thank you for helping us tell the story, because it's very important for all of Georgia to understand the gravity of the situation for rural Georgia. And we're just very grateful that count on us to continue to provide you the facts on the ground. And we'll speak as often as you care to, if that helps promote getting the message out to the public. And we just appreciate the public's patience and understanding, and we're going to work together to make sure we get Georgia back rolling.
Well, Commissioner Black, thank you very much.
Thank you. God bless you.
Georgia Agriculture Commissioner Gary Black talking about the devastation in southwest Georgia. And we'd like to hear from some growers affected by the storm. Randy Hudson and Mark Peel are seeing the impact firsthand on their farms in South Georgia. Randy's a pecan grower and owner of the Hudson Pecan Company, and he's joining us from Irwin County. Hello, Randy.
Good morning.
And Mark Peel, he grows and gins cotton in Berrien County, president of South Central Georgia Gin Company. Good morning. Thank you very much for joining us, Randy.
Thank you.
Good morning.
So you and your family rode out the storm, Randy, on your 2,000-acre pecan farm in South Central Georgia. How are you doing?
Well, we're here, and we're very blessed in many ways. And, of course, our sympathies, particularly to our really good friends in the pecan industry, for those that took direct hit. We were blessed in that we were not in the direct path of the storm, and that we still have something to harvest, but many of our friends don't. And our concerns, our prayers go out to them.
Mark, you and your family have been in this business for generations, growing cotton, also ginning cotton, and you consult with other cotton growers. So give us a sense of the morning after the storm. What did you see when you surveyed the damage?
Well, we were out about right at daybreak, found it hard to sleep with all the wind and the storm going on. And, it went from what we saw at the time was like 50% loss. And then as we began to venture out a little bit over into other counties, we saw, as much as 100% loss. We found, cotton grows on a stalk. And I pulled up a few stalks that had absolutely no cotton on them whatsoever.
Yeah.
A really good crop of cotton is 2.5 bale cotton, and that's what we were on target to harvest this year. And we went from 2.5 bale cotton to, I don't know if we even pick some of this cotton. There's not enough there to justify the cost of running a machine through the fields.
How much had the state's of your crop and the state's cotton crop, as far as been picked before the storm hit?
It's hard to say. Maybe third of it, maybe. Maybe that's a little more, but maybe 25%, 30% of it, yeah.
So how was everybody hustling to get it off of the field beforehand?
Oh, yeah. We ran all day Monday, all night Monday night, all day Tuesday, and all night Tuesday night, then right up to, you know, Wednesday evening, right up before the storm came in.
Yeah. Randy, how much of the pecan crop had you harvested before the storm?
Well, regrettably, less than 1%. We had just started, and we really were about 2 weeks out from when our plans start, when we planned to start. But we saw a storm coming, and we went ahead and took some nuts off the trees because we knew it would probably make them lay over worse if there were nuts on the trees. So we started early shaking, green shaking, to try to save some of our trees. And we think it worked. But here again, I'd just like to elaborate a little bit on what the commissioner said.
Yeah.
And the commissioner and the commissioner's office have done an outstanding job helping the growers here in Georgia. And there's just not enough that we can say about President Trump, Secretary Perdue, and Commissioner Black. They have truly helped our industry in doing all that they possibly can. But I think what the message we need to tell, and that we want our listeners to hear, is that this is just not a disaster that's here today and gone. What has happened down here in South Georgia is nothing less than a catastrophe of a magnitude of some major bomb event where you just change a farmer's life forever. We have generational pecan orchards that have been passed from family to family that weren't just blown out of the ground. I mean, weren't just blown over. They were blown over and then rolled over, literally blown out of the ground. And generational farms that won't replant next year and have pecans, they're 10 or 20 years from being where they were today. And that was one of the issues Commissioner brought up about the issue of a pecan grower. And that is that when you lose 1,000 acres or 100 acres of pecans, you're 10 years getting back to where you are today. And so that is the issue, particularly in regards to restructuring debt. You had $10,000 acre land that literally overnight became $2,000 an acre worth of expense just to get it cleaned up so that maybe next year you could either replant pecans and harvest 10 years later or plant you a crop of peanuts or cotton. So the commissioner did an excellent job in explaining that this is a generational catastrophic event to the pecan industry.
Well, it's overwhelming to picture it for you. When the president was here yesterday and offered federal aid for affected areas, disaster declaration making funding available, as we just heard from the commissioner. So some of this funding could take place in the form of debt restructuring and grants. Do you plan to take advantage of these kind of grants for rebuilding?
In the pecan industry, there will be some opportunities to recapture some cleanup monies. There's not a lot more than that. To be honest with you, this is, again, going to be a very significant financial burden on the families to overcome.
Randy, is it like I imagine a lot of farmers, they get loans from year to year, they borrow the money for their seed,
yes,
for their crops, and then they have to pay it back at the end of the year?
Yes. Most loans, there are long-term loans that are available to buy land, plant pecan trees. The majority of the monies that most farmers will borrow will be short-term annual loans that must be paid back. And to just give you an example of the fixed and variable cost to produce an acre of pecans is over $2,000 per acre. So on our farm, we're talking about a $4 million indebtedness that I have to come up with when the year's over just to pay my long-term and short-term loans. Well, when my pecans are gone and my pecan trees are gone, I've got $4 million of debt sitting there that I've got to cover. And we're going to be okay, but I have so many friends, particularly over in the Seminole County area, Baker County area, that southwest corner of the state where the storm came in with such fury, that it didn't just destroy the trees, it destroyed the crop. It literally blew the trees into the woods. And so those situations have put such a trauma to those families, and you just have to, your heart just goes out to them. At least we will have something to harvest in our state. as compared to those growers over in the Seminole, Decatur, and Grady County areas of Georgia. And you just have to pray for them and hope the best.
Well, I would love to keep talking with you all. We're going to head up to a break in just a minute. But before we get there, quickly, Randy, even before Hurricane Michael, pecan growers in Georgia were not having an easy go of it. So what has happened quickly since the trade war with China?
Well, the trade war with China just absolutely to hurt Georgia growers. 90% of our pecans approximately go to China. The trade war has reduced the prices by anywhere from 30 to 40%. I'd like to say this. If you don't mind, I'd like to say one thing, if I could.
As long as you can say it quickly.
Okay. If you're a listener in Georgia and you want to help the pecan industry, you go to your local grocery store and you buy a Georgia-grown pecan. Buy Georgia-grown. We need your help. If you want to help us, buy Georgia-grown pecans.
Well, that's a
and
good
that's
message.
That's the best thing you could do to help us.
Great message to hang on to with Randy Hudson, a pecan grower, and cotton grower Mark Peel, talking about crop damage after the hurricane. We'll be back with more on the pretty sorry state of Georgia's top crops after the devastating Hurricane Michael blow last week. We'll be back in just a minute. Stay with us. From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. Today, we're taking stock of the damage from Hurricane Michael. Randy Hudson and Mark Peel grow pecans and cotton, respectively, in South Central Georgia, working to salvage what is left of their crops. We've just been hearing absolute devastation. Randy is joining us from Irwin County, Mark from Berrien County. Randy, I just want to pick up with you. You asked consumers to help out by buying Georgia-grown pecans, but I want to get back to that question about what was going on with the price of pecans given the trade war with China.
Well, it's been a very, very difficult situation. Our company, for the most part, has been exporting since 1999, and it was about 90% of our book of business. And we were doing about $20, $25 million a year worth of sales into China. And as of today, we do not have a single order on book to be able to get into China. As a result, the U.S. supply is being dumped back into the domestic market, and the prices are being depressed and are down as much as $1 to $1.50 a pound on the quote side, which means that in Georgia alone, that's going on top of the hurricane, we're going to lose $100 million just on price alone due to the tariff war.
Mm.
So we already had one storm that came through in regards to the tariff, and then the hurricane was just a finishing coup de grace. It's a terrible situation in the pecan industry in Georgia.
How about for you, Mark? You work with about 200 cotton growers, gin about 60,000 barrels of cotton every year. So from a financial standpoint, how do you think you and your colleagues and business partners are going to be affected?
Well, by the storm, is that what you're referring to?
By the storm, yeah, indeed.
Storm. Yes. Well, you know, we could lose, just the cotton gin alone could lose $500,000. You know, we were, you know, slated to do 60,000 to 65,000 bales this year is what we were anticipating. We went out and actually rented more warehouse space because we had one of the best crops we'd had in years. And see, one thing, let me just stop here and just mention this. We had Irma came through last year.
Right,
You know, and hammered us last year. We thought we had never seen anything. I mean, we had at that point, you know, like Irma, I mean, blew our cotton on the ground, you know, and lit the stalk literally on the ground. The difference was Irma came earlier in the season, and we weren't as close to harvest as we were this time. And see, our farmers were grasping, you know, for, you know, this was going to be the year that they, you know, paid off their loans.
Right, made it back up, yeah.
You know, the banks extended, you know, some of them had to carry over, you know, to this year. And the banks helped them, you know, work with them. And the big question mark is out there now. Here we are again, another year with this devastation that we've never seen. And people's thinking like, well, were the banks going to go with us this year? You know, they were hesitant about going with us, you know, for 2018. And I was glad to hear the commissioner mention, you know, the debt reconstruction and the bank summit, because that's where we're at. I mean, I'm afraid that we're going to lose a lot of our farmers, a number of our farmers. I mean, not, and these are good farmers. These are people who've been farming for, you know, for generations and generations, and they're smart farmers. But, I mean, we've had disease. We've had pestilence. You know, now we've had storms. And, you know, the bank can only do so much. I mean, we know they've got rules and regs of their own, you know, that they have to go by. And just a lot of uncertainty out there. But back to your original question, I mean, we could, you know, we could be off, you know, 30% on our bales, what we gin here at the gin. And, you know, that could be $500,000-$600,000 loss for us. And our farmers, you know, I mean, they've got a lot of money tied up in this crop. And in some cases, they're not going to harvest anything.
Yeah, well, that's a question. You all have been in this business for many generations, you and your families.
Yeah.
And as you said, the risk is that some people just may not pick it up again. Would you encourage them? I mean, it's a sounds like a really, really hard business. If somebody says, I've just had it, I'm pulling up my stakes, what would you say to them?
That's a good question. And I have been asked that question. And I've been asked to go out to fields and walk fields and you know, try to help them decide whether it's worth picking cotton or not. And there is as much frustration as I've ever seen. And these guys are thinking, you know, Mark, I just don't see it. You know, I just can't see it. And mainly they're referring to cotton. You know, peanuts, we grow a lot of peanuts in our area. They seem to weather the storm okay. You know, and the corn did okay. The price is not so great for corn, but, you know, corn was already harvested. It's an earlier crops planted in March. And the big question mark is from what I'm hearing, is on cotton alone. You know, it's saying, Mark, I just can't keep growing cotton. You know, here we are 2 years in a row. We've been hit by storms, and cotton is very vulnerable, you know, to storms. And I don't know. You know, I really don't know what the answer is. You know, they, you know. I really don't know how to answer that question.
How about for you, Randy? Is that something you've considered? Just I'm going to jack it in.
Well, I'm going to tell you. Last year we lost over 1,000 trees to Irma, and at that time I walked across orchards and I said, "Look, I don't know about this." But then I went back and planted those spots and counting on my grandchildren one day to harvest pecans. And of course, just now I'm out here today with probably at least another 1,000 trees on the ground. And just every acre I got has got just limbs piled on top of limbs, which is going to make, and I'm not crying because of my neighbors that can't even get in their orchards and their trees are in the woods. We're better off than that, and we are going to be able to salvage part of our crop. But I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I hadn't cried a few tears. And this has not been very, this is so frustrating to, and pecan orchards and all of us pecan growers, pecan is just more than growing pecans. It's a way of life. It becomes a perspective of where you get up every morning and it's your life. It's what it's like your children, and then one day it's not there anymore, and you just don't. You get so frustrated with how are you going to handle tomorrow, and we're out there today trying to handle harvest, and it's just so frustrating. But you don't stop because, you know, I'm a fifth-generation pecan farmer. My great-great-grandfather planted one of the first orchards in this state, and I've lost five trees that he planted back in the 1800s, which are like part of the family. And so how do you can't walk away. But then I'm sitting here with such a debt load, and you ask your question, well, how do I repay this now, and how do I start over? And I've got a son now who left a very good job to come home on the farm, and he's looking at me like, Dad, what's tomorrow hold for us? And I say, look, we're going to get through this.
Well,
and we're going to get through it.
We want to expand this conversation. Randy, Mark, please stay with us. Andy Lucas joins us now on the line from GPB Macon. He's PR director for the Georgia Farm Bureau. And also GPB's own Ross Terrell is in the studio. He's been covering the recovery efforts in Georgia. But first, Andy, hello.
Hello, good morning. Thank you for having us on today.
Well, you're with the Farm Bureau, so you do have a big picture. You've been listening to Randy and Mark. Do farmers have insurance ways of covering these sort of catastrophic, as we just heard, problems?
Unfortunately, no. You've got a lot of situations out there where you'll hear that we have crop insurance, but they can't overcome the loss that we're seeing in cotton. The pecan industry is not set up in that particular situation. Fresh fruits and vegetables, they're not able to have those type coverages. And so, you know, for farm families across central and southwest Georgia, their lives will be changed forever.
Yeah, and how about cotton, of course, in Georgia, multi-million dollar industry, provides a large percentage of all cotton grown in the southeast. How will damage to Georgia's cotton industry and all of these industries you've discussed affect the rest of the country?
Well, the end result is, you know, it's a supply and demand market, and as long as we can supply the market, you know, the prices was the most affordable that anybody could withstand at a grocery store. We don't pay a lot when we go and shop at the grocery store. And so with these prices and this impact on our crops, you know, there could be some increases in cost for consumers.
And how about jobs? How many jobs would estimated be tied up in these industries?
Well, the recovery effort for this is probably greater than the jobs. You know, when we traveled down to Bainbridge, Grady, Thompson, and Baker, and some of those counties down there over the last couple of days, you can see a workforce down there trying to recover. But I think the thing is, the commissioner stressed, is it's going to take a long time for this recovery to take place. They're damaged gins, they're damaged buying points for the peanuts. Power's not restored. So, you know, this is going to be a conversation that we continue to have for weeks and months. And I just can't stress enough to tell you the hardship that you're seeing. And as much as I've covered ag news all my life, and as much as I've seen the farmers have this resilient attitude, they just need a message of hope. And I just hope that the administration can step in and offer some solutions for our farmers that they can recover and begin to build back their lives, because it is certainly will be changed for the rest of their life.
Well, that was certainly the message from the president yesterday. We're going to fix this. We're going to take care of this. Do you have a lot of faith in the ability of the administration to take care of it?
I think that's a good question. I think time will tell. We were fortunate to cover Secretary Perdue coming to the Cordell Farmers Market on Sunday, and there was a large crowd there, and the commissioner was there as well. And I think farmers, as they assembled, they were looking for solutions. And I think as the program started, it was apparent that sometimes the solutions have to be discovered. And I think Randy did a wonderful job of explaining that there are going to be other things that we have to look at, and we've got to be creative with the things that we seek from federal and state. And I think that's where the recovery, the producers around the state, they're needing a message of hope, and they're looking for those answers. And the response time with the commissioner and the secretary, as well as the president, was certainly timely. You know, for him to be having boots on the ground this quick, we can just offer that's the hope that we're looking for.
Well, and that hope may come for many people, as we've heard from Randy and Mark, in the form of debt restructuring. Is the Georgia Farm Bureau working with banks or lenders to help forgive debt, or at least lessen it, or figure out another way to deal with it for people who lost so much in this storm?
Absolutely. I'm here today representing Gerald Long, who is our president. He's in conversations with as many industry people as he can reach out to. You know, this is going to be an ongoing process, and so there'll be lots of conversations, as the commissioner identified, that we'll be reaching out to the lending institutions and trying to figure out those solutions. The good thing is, it's an open audience now, and as we continue to tell the stories of the producers, it will be easy to get those messages as an agenda item to our elected officials.
That's Andy Lucas. He's PR director for the Georgia Farm Bureau. Also with us is GPB's Ross Terrell. He's been updating us and reporting on the relief efforts. Ross, how many people are still having to stay in shelters even following last week's storm?
Yeah, well, power outages are still a large issue going down in southwest Georgia. And right now the Red Cross estimates there are some 2,000 residents still staying in shelters. And one of the things they pointed out is, you know, with these power outages, it makes it hard to communicate with people and let them know where to go to get help. where they can find help, where distribution points. And so that's one of the main challenges that they're dealing with.
So we're talking to people who have communities, have tight-knit communities that work with each other. But how does the American Red Cross, you spoke to the president yesterday of the Red Cross, want people to know as they continue to assist people in need?
Yeah, well, they're putting together a mobile fleet to kind of go out and reach these people. And social media has also played a large role in this. There are city council members who are constantly posting. Here are distribution points at local colleges, arenas. We're handing out ice, water, tarps, kind of anything you could think of that can help you in this situation. It's really just a matter of we have to get the materials to people and can't necessarily expect them to get to us because debris is still on the road. There still is no power, and people do need help.
So we're beyond the assessment phase and into the boots on the ground phase. But Andy, Ross is talking about practical solutions. But you know what I'm hearing from Randy and Mark? There's a huge emotional cost to what has gone on. It's very moving to hear. And I'm wondering how your interactions with farmers, those who've lost so much, is going. You know, where do people who lost all or most of their crops, where do they go from here? And do they move on to different crops? Or are their farming careers perhaps over?
I think it's a combination of things. A lot of producers are in a better position than others. But, you know, when we were in Cordell, you could hear the stories whether they were young or old. And within just a matter of seconds of saying, you know, how's things going, you know, the emotions were really at the surface. And so you can see young folks troubled by the situation that they're in because they've extended themselves based on the probability that they're going to be able to harvest their crops and be able to run their equipment and the things that they're faced with. So, you know, for a lot of it, it was an opportunity for a therapy session, and I think there will be continued therapy sessions as we continue to look for solutions. But I think, as it's been said earlier, I think farming in Georgia will be different. It will look different. And as I hate to say this, there will be less farmers in the state based on some of the things that we're seeing with the conditions around the state.
All right, so we have just a minute left before we close. Randy, I'd love to ask you, where are you finding hope right now?
Well, we've got every family member picking up limbs, some who've never picked up limbs, and chainsaws running with uncles and cousins and neighbors. And I just want to tell you, unless you've been in rural Georgia during a tragedy, you don't understand the humanity of our country and of our state and of our communities. But we're going to get through this. We're still going to have Georgia pecans for sale. And I just say again, if you want to help us and we need help, go to your grocery store and buy a Georgia-grown pecan. Not a Mexican-grown pecan, but a Georgia-grown pecan. We need your help, and that will help us more than anything.
Randy Hudson, so grateful for your time. Randy Hudson from Irwin County, thank you.
Thank you.
And Mark Peel there from Berrien County, cotton growing president of the South Central Georgia Gin Company. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we also really want to thank Andy Lucas from the Georgia Farm Bureau. Please take care. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And GPB's Ross Terrell. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. What a story. So much to think about. We will be back with On Second Thought tomorrow. Thanks so much for joining us.